As I understand it, according to the Director of Revenue, the issue in this case is who has the right to discharge a witness from a subpoena? Is it the court or is it the witness?
Or is it the party who called him? The party who subpoenaed him?
The statute says it's the court. It says only the court has the right to discharge the subpoena, discharge the witness from the subpoena. But their argument on pages 18, 19 in brief say, well, you know, these officers are very busy people, and it's very expensive to make sure that they all show up at these hearings, and so that's why under the scale due process, it tips in favor of, you know, if they don't show up, they don't show up, you're just stuck with it.
In this case, the prosecutor issued a subpoena.
That's correct.
Was it a subpoena deuces tecum or just a regular subpoena?
You know, I don't remember.
Well, I got a copy from the legal file, and it's not really clear. But I mean, was the purpose for him to testify or for him just to bring the records to be offered into evidence?
Well, it would have to be to testify because under 302, 312, those records come in without a foundation. So there's no reason to have an officer show up and lay a foundation and bring the records in when the statute allows them to come in without it.
Well, it could be subpoenaed for purposes of rebuttal.
Right, to testify.
Department, yeah, he could offer the reports, see what the defendant has to say, and then decide whether he has to do any cleanup with his witness.
Absolutely, but that purpose then would be to testify. There would be no purpose just to lay a foundation and get those records in evidence, which is obviated by 302.312.
But didn't the records come in without his testimony?
Well, yes, because he wasn't there. He didn't show up.
So obviously they were able to use the records without his testimony.
Right.
But they shouldn't
have been. That's our whole argument, is that's the violation of due process, is that the court ordered that officer to appear and testify.
Did your client ask for a continuance?
No, and I'll tell you why. It is because if you look at the record, I think we had continued it out 4 or 5 months. And when we got that last continuance, the court called us and said, no more. You know, we're going to dispose of it on this date. And so I had to rearrange my schedule in order to do it because Vernon County's dockets coincide with several of the other court's dockets. And so I kept having all these conflicts. And the older cases were older. And I kept asking Judge Quitnow, and finally said, no, enough's enough. So I knew there's no continuances. But we don't get that on the record.
But your argument, your backup argument is that even if normally it would be my obligation to subpoena the officer if I want them there, here, they were subpoenaed, they didn't show up, we can't presume they would have obeyed. It would be futile because they failed to obey a subpoena.
Right. I mean, a subpoena is an order from a court. It's not from the parties or their attorneys. And there's no difference in subpoenas. We don't have red ones for prosecutors and blue ones for defense attorneys.
It would be a bad precedent to say they can just not show up for prosecutor subpoenas with impunity. But
right. That just says the police officers
don't want to sign the judge's signature.
I'm sorry.
All subpoenas have the judge's signature.
Yes.
I think subpoenas just have the clerk's signature. They don't have the judge's signature.
Right, but a subpoena is considered to be an order from the court.
I understand. Section 491.160 discusses the remedy when a witness doesn't show up, right?
Yeah, it's some of the remedies, sure.
Right. Well, I mean, it says if your witness doesn't show up after being duly summoned, the party for whom such witness shall have been summoned shall fill out an affidavit, and then goes on from there.
Right, it allows them.
So the statutes at least don't provide a remedy for a non-subpoenaing party to even get a continuance.
I think due process does. The court has ordered that witness to appear and testify. Both sides have a right to expect, and either the court has a right to expect.
Well,
let me ask this question.
Yes.
Isn't due process satisfied by giving you the same opportunity to subpoena the witness that the other party had?
No.
Why isn't that sufficient for due process?
Well, because, as I said, the subpoenas don't differentiate. The officer's been ordered to appear and testify until the court discharges.
Well, the statute allows either party to subpoena a witness.
Sure. But
and the statutes provide for the remedy if a witness that you count on doesn't show up.
If a witness that you're counting on, yes.
So why doesn't that satisfy due process? There's a statutory remedy to make sure that you're not in the situation that you're in.
Because when the court orders a witness to be there, they're to be there, and everybody has a right to expect that witness to be there.
But if the person requesting the subpoena to be issued by the court withdraws that subpoena or withdraws that request, doesn't that free up the witness?
Well, no.
I mean, if I subpoena somebody, if I'm trying a case and I subpoena somebody to be there, and after I get to trial, I mean, you know what, I really didn't need him after all. Can't I ask the court to withdraw the subpoena or take?
Yes. Yes, you can ask the court to discharge them from the subpoena. And every time I've been in that situation, the court then gives the other side, they say, is it okay with you if this witness is released?
Do you have, it appears to me that you shifted what your argument was from your briefs to hear an oral argument. Is that you're focusing on the release from subpoena as opposed to in your briefs, it sure seemed to me that you were focusing on a violation of due process to admit the evidence without the witness there.
Right, because 302.312 is simply an evidentiary statute that eliminates the foundational requirement for the records. They come in. Mm-hmm. But the witness...
But isn't that a totally different question than whether the witness was erroneous or the witness was required to be there because the court didn't release him on the subpoena?
Right, and the court ordered him to be there, and they're required to show up and appear and testify, and everybody has a right to expect
that. Are you backing off your other argument, or are you just doing this one because that's what we ask questions about?
No, I was looking at the brief of the other side, and I just, you know, they went through the balancing test and everything, and I think if you look at the balancing test, each time they, you know, put out the balancing test, if you just answer that question with, but the court ordered the witness to be there.
Do you have any case law that supports that position, that if the court orders the witness, if a subpoena issues, the party doesn't have a right to release them, and the other side has a due process violation for them not to appear if they weren't released by the court?
Nothing directly on point exactly like that.
In effect, we would have to issue. You're going to have to issue a subpoena in every case, even though they're already subpoenaed. So the court will their clerk will have to issue duplicate subpoenas in every case because the defendant would have no right to rely on the fact that the prosecutor subpoenaed them.
But that's done.
The second subpoena would come from the Department of Redundancy Department.
The other side, when the witness is essential to their case, don't they issue a duplicate subpoena, a second subpoena?
Well, it depends. If you've got a lot of money, those persons' depositions have already been taken, they've been subpoenaed, yes, by both sides. But
most of the time, you're not going to have witnesses who are beneficial to both sides, or who you want to cross-examine. So, most of the time, it's the witnesses subpoenaed by the other side that you don't want. They're presenting testimony that's harmful to you.
Well, generally, when the witness is subpoenaed, a police officer in a case like that, you kind of expect the police officer to show up and honor the subpoena and testify, and you're going to get a shot to cross-examine. It's when the other side doesn't subpoena the officer, that's when you have to get them in there because you've got a lot of questions.
What about the case decisions that say when there's a failure to respond to a subpoena, the burden's on the party desiring the evidence to seek relief from the court?
Yes, and I sought relief from the court.
Well, did you seek a continuance?
Like I said, we had already been told prior to showing up down there, there's no more continuances because we've continued it 4 or 5 times.
Do judges ever tell you things that they change their mind on? And if not, don't you preserve your record anyway?
Yeah, I've had very little success with getting a judge to change his mind when I've been arguing in front of them. In fact, I've been told many times, we're done. I already answered that question.
Concern is there are several cases that say, you know, you have the obligation, not necessarily to subpoena, but even at that stage when somebody doesn't show up, because sometimes, obviously, it's a surprise to both parties, right? When a witness doesn't show up, sometimes both sides are surprised.
Sometimes
the
both sides.
The statute clearly provides a remedy for the subpoenaing witness.
Yes.
Which I said before, you can seek an attachment. The judge can send out an order. Okay. So the issue is, what's the remedy for the non-subpoenaing party? And that's you in this case.
Right.
And the cases say that you had to seek relief from the court.
No, because there's never been a case that I could find where the witness had actually been subpoenaed. All the other cases, the witnesses were not subpoenaed.
Well, are you familiar with the Rohner case, R-O-H-N-E-R versus Bi-State Development Agency?
Your Honor, I don't know off the top of my head.
But in this case, we don't have, quote unquote, the pure case where no subpoena was issued.
That's correct.
You're not relying on simply that the statute says there has to be no foundation. You just admit it.
Right.
But there was a subpoena issued, and that's the facts before us.
Yes, that's
and
correct.
And that's against the question of whether subpoena was your right to subpoena was preserved, your ability to get a continuous
to cross-examine.
That's all part of this case where a subpoena was issued, and then so that's this case. And
right.
So
under the 14th,
it's not the case where there was no subpoena issued.
Right. Under the 14th Amendment, you should have the right to cross-examine fact witnesses, and this is the fact witness. He's the sole accuser. Reserve my time.
You want to address your constitutional argument?
Yes, that's what I was just saying. Under the 14th Amendment, when you have a fact witness, unlike the cases that were cited with Social Security Disability, where it's an independent, neutral expert witness who's just looking at records and going, well, this is my diagnosis, you have a fact witness, and many times you get different testimony live that's in the police reports. I don't know how many times police officers said, yes, you're right, I made a mistake in that, I forgot to include this, and that's what you lose when you're not allowed to cross-examine a fact witness like a police officer is a sole accuser trying to take somebody's...
But yet we allow rules of evidence to be just have it, for example, the business record exception to the hearsay rule. You don't really have the person who prepared the record as you have the system that was used or it was contemporaneous. You don't really have the actual... You have an exception by the business records exception of the hearsay rule, and similarly... Can't they do the same thing in these kinds of civil actions regarding driver's licenses?
My understanding is business record. Police officers' reports are not business records. They can't come in. I've seen cases that say that. Secondly, under the business records exception,
it's a different statute,
right,
not a business record, but a different statute to allow
right.
these records in.
But under the business records section, if somebody subpoenas the business records, they have to give you notice up front. You have the right to object. And that stops exactly this process that occurred in this case. So this is the only situation I know of where you subpoena a witness, the evidentiary foundation is removed, but yet the witness doesn't appear, and then you have absolutely no
I don't think you can object to the introduction of business records and say you have to produce the person who made them, and that's
no,
not
but you can object. You have objections that you can make on the business records.
What if the attorney would have just decided never to subpoena the witness and just offer the records?
Well, I think that's a completely different case. I think the cases have already addressed that issue.
And they say there's no due process violation.
Right, because...
So in your opinion, they created their own due process violation by subpoenaing a witness.
Right.
Which you had an equal opportunity to do.
Again, it's an order from the court.
No, I understand. But due process can be satisfied many ways. In other words,
right.
If I give you every opportunity that I give the other side... Some might say the process is due. I mean,
but
it's a fair process.
Right, but we were not given the same opportunities. They get to get their evidence in just by plunking down the records and not having their witness show up and not having their witness be cross-examined. We didn't get that.
You're saying you have a right to rely on their having subpoenaed them until they
yes.
say, indicate that they
Absolutely.
No longer want the witness, because otherwise it's a sort of bait and switch kind of situation?
Trial by surprise, which is exactly what due process is supposed to eliminate, is under fundamental fairness, is you're not supposed to be able to spring these things on people.
How did you know whether or not the witness was subpoenaed at all?
Oh, because we receive copies of the subpoena when they're issued.
Now what part of the, is it the 14th Amendment by the penumbra doctrine, by the incorporation, and what section of the Constitution is being violated? And is it a matter of rational basis? There's no strict scrutiny. How do you get this 14th Amendment in?
Well, 14th Amendment applies to the states. And the Missouri Constitution has the same due process. So it violates both the 14th Amendment and Missouri's Constitution.
So which part of the Constitution of the United States is being violated? 14th Amendment gets the Constitution of the United States in. Which section of the Constitution is being violated?
Mean state or federal order?
Well, 14th Amendment is not, it's federal.
Right.
14th Amendment is not the state constitution, it's the federal constitution.
No, but it applies to the states, and in the case law that I cited in my
brief. So which section of the Constitution is being violated?
Well, Missouri constitutional due process.
No, it's the federal constitution.
And the 14th Amendment due process. The 14th Amendment due process clause.
Counselor, if the attorney for the department had decided just to call the live witness and not introduce the records, wouldn't you have had the same opportunity to introduce the records that he did?
Yes,
and just bring the certified copy and you offer them.
Well, plus I could just lay a foundation with the officer sitting there. You can sit there and say, well, these are your records. I mean, you can get them in. There's no problem. As long as the witness is there, that takes care of all the issues.
Now, getting back to the state constitution and due process, isn't it a rational basis to say the state wants safe streets and they want to make it easier for, they don't want to bother police, and they want to, first step, get the records in. If no one asks for a subpoena, the records are in.
But then that allows simply that takes away the subpoena power of the court, that the court issues an order.
No, we can still subpoena. But if there is no subpoena, you're saying if there's no subpoena, then the records shouldn't be allowed in. Why not? Why can't the state rationally say, we want to protect the police from being called in every case to set the foundation, if no, they can always issue a subpoena?
No, I'm not arguing the case where no subpoenas were issued. This is just strictly when the officer's been subpoenaed. Okay, he's been ordered to appear by the court. Okay, I don't have a problem with the officer showing up and those records coming in without him having to lay a foundation for that. But he needs to be subject to cross-examination about those records, because those records many times are inaccurate, there's mistakes made, and there's a lot of information left out.
That gets back to good Judge Fisher's line of questioning about, did you preserve the issue of subpoena versus the records getting in without foundation? It all rests on this, whether or not you preserve your rights under subpoena, not to the constitutionality of the statute.
Well, I think that the due process,
the subpoena would have cured your problems. If the officer had appeared, you could cross-examine them, do whatever you want.
Well, the subpoena would not have cured it. I mean, you're assuming that because if we had two subpoenas in the officer, that somehow that
the officer would show.
Yeah, he would show up because of my subpoena, because mine was so much more powerful than the prosecutor.
But if he didn't, the statutes provide you a remedy, right? You just say, Judge, I needed that testimony issue in order to go out and get him. And the statutes provide for that remedy.
They do. Only, having tried that before, no judge will ever issue a body attachment for a police officer, in my experience.
But in
it's kind of one of those things you don't really know till you ask.
Well, I have asked, and the courts say no. And, you know, but, you know.
You have asked for a body attachment on a police officer?
Yes, I had a couple of blow at the thing, and I asked for a body attachment, I had them subpoenaed, and the courts said no, we're not going to do a body attachment, we'll fix it some other way.
Counsel, in your brief, you did specifically argue that you cannot constitutionally rely upon introduction of the records alone, that you have to have someone come in and testify about them. Are you backing off that now? Because your brief is different than your argument now. In your brief, you appeared to argue that, point one, the court erred in admitting respondents' exhibit into evidence because it violated the right to due process, and that it deprived him of the right to confront and cross-examine the witnesses. You're basically saying you have to subpoena someone have to have someone come in and testify. I thought was your argument in your briefs that, without regard to the subpoena and so forth.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I just wasn't clear in my brief. This court has already addressed the issue when the officer's never been subpoenaed.
And you agree
and I understand
that the fact
I would love for you to overrule that.
That the defendant has the right to subpoena the officer. Would normally, if no one else does, be sufficient. But you're saying here,
I don't agree with that. But the court has.
But you're not asking us. Okay.
I would love for you to overrule that. I didn't want to go down that road.
I just wanted to clarify.
I'm strictly arguing the case when the officer's been subpoenaed. Okay. That's when it violates.
We're going to give the state a chance now. You have time for rebuttal, and then get the second case.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Had the driver subpoenaed the officer in this case, and the officer didn't show, and he asked for a body attachment, and the court refused to honor that request and then admitted these evidence, then we would have to concede that would violate due process. But that's not the situation we have. The driver wants to argue that, you know, he didn't do any of this stuff because he knew it wouldn't work, but he has to preserve the record.
So you
he
have no problem with the judge issuing a body attachment if they don't obey a subpoena?
If the party who issued the subpoena asked for a body attachment, then no, we have no problem with it. And probably.
So in effect, you're saying you have to have two. The defendant has to subpoena in every case. Can't assume that a witness is going to honor the subpoena issued by the court? Because otherwise you're saying they have no remedy since
they
didn't issue it.
The driver has cited no authority for his position.
But I'm asking you as a matter of policy.
Well, isn't a remedy you can ask for a continuance?
Hold it. excuse me, as a matter of policy, should the court, you're saying the court should say defendant has to issue a subpoena if defendant wants any relief if the officer doesn't appear?
That's correct. Or, you know, I would imagine in most situations if he were to say I was relying on that subpoena, I expected him to be here, most of the time a court's going to probably give a continuance. Now,
Did that occur here?
Well, he didn't ask. We don't, you know, so.
What objection did he make that he did preserve? The question is, when he was arguing these records should not come into, should not be admitted in evidence, was he arguing that I was relying on the subpoena? Was that the argument that he made, and I don't have a right to cross-examine him because I thought he'd be here because of the subpoena, or was he saying constitutionally they're not admissible unless you have a live witness?
The word subpoena was not in his objection. His objection was that Section 302.312, which allows the admissions of this evidence in any criminal case, in any court or administrative body in the state, obviously it wouldn't necessarily apply to criminal cases because of the Sixth Amendment right to confrontation, but that itself violated due process, that admitting that without the officer being there violated due process.
The word subpoena is a different argument at court than is being made here.
Right. The first mention of the subpoena issues were in his reply brief. The argument that he made in his opening brief was a much broader argument that the entire statute violates due process.
And in effect, he was making a Crawford argument that you had to have your accuser there in court to testify, that you couldn't rely on written documentation instead.
Exactly. And Crawford is precisely, and those sorts of arguments are precisely, you know, an incorrect analysis. They look at this issue narrowly. Did hearsay come in? Did the person have a right to confront? It's a narrow issue. Whereas when you're looking at the due process clause in terms of civil cases, then it's a broader analysis. You look at the entire process and you do the four-part Eldridge test in terms of what are the state's interests, the risk of an erroneous deprivation of the interest through the procedures used, the probable value or the probable value of any additional or substitute procedural safeguards, and the government's interest, including the burdens that additional procedural safeguard would impose. And that's the sort of analysis that the driver essentially fails to engage in. He, you know, wants to, again, either continue to look at it narrowly under Crawford or to attack the cases, you know, to sort of make these piecemeal factual distinctions. But he doesn't engage with the four-part test, even though this might be a different scenario than Matthews versus Eldridge or Richardson, for instance. We still need to engage in that four-part test. That four-part test is still important just because this is, you know, a legal privilege that is being denied
In
the
court,
driver.
Though, not through an administrative procedure. This is through the court.
This is through the court.
Yes. That's right. Well, and just because somebody complied with all the foundational requirements of the statute still doesn't necessarily mean that everything in those reports comes into evidence. So for example, if he would object it on some legitimate foundational basis, just because those reports are in evidence doesn't mean that everything that contains them is in evidence.
I can't necessarily think of a foundational basis, but it might be if there was hearsay within the couple prior cases.
For example, if the maintenance records for the blood alcohol concentration level weren't previously admitted, and you come with your certified copy and you offer it, and he says, "Your Honor, I object to the blood alcohol concentration because lack of foundation, there's no maintenance records to show that the machine was properly maintained." So if he had done that, that would be preserved. Those records would be there, but the court could not consider the results of the test.
That's exactly correct. Or if within the police report there was extra hearsay. And
right.
There weren't any.
Yeah, just because not everything in there is in. So by our case decisions, we have somewhat protected the fact, understanding that you're not required to bring a live witness all the time. If you didn't show up with a live witness, and he made a foundational objection that wasn't contained in those records, the trial court would be obligated to sustain it.
That's correct.
If you didn't have your live witness there, you might not be able to make your case.
Is there anything here to show why the policeman didn't come, or whether that was standard, or whether that policeman was expected?
That's not in the record.
What did the prosecutor say when the witness didn't appear?
He didn't say anything in Norman Dowdy's case. In David Dowdy's case, he said that he had written a letter inviting him and that the officer didn't
appear.
But
there was a subpoena, right?
Well, the subpoena, and this might have been part of the confusion, the subpoena was for an earlier date, for July 24th, I believe. And then this hearing wasn't held until October 24th. So there might have been some miscommunication in regard to
July 6th.
July 6th, that's right. Now, obviously, the subpoena is... subpoena is valid until, a witness is released, but...
But the officer may or may not have been aware of
Was this a subpoena just as taken, or just a regular subpoena?
The subpoena indicates that he's supposed to bring his notes and evidence pertaining to the above case. So it was both.
Mm-hmm. Does the record indicate whether or not the subpoena was properly served on the officer?
It does. It indicates that a sheriff's deputy served it, I believe. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it doesn't indicate. It just says it's signed, but it doesn't say who served it. But it does indicate.
Copy I have. The returns shows the delivery to the person being subpoenaed. Out of the legal file.
I did want to make one clarification. I may have used in the brief a term of art unartfully, and that's to make sure there's no clarification about the trial de novo. And the reason I did that is, the direct attack on the statute itself, as I said before, 302.312 applies to any courtroom, any administrative proceeding in the state in terms of admitting the director's records. Under 302.530, a driver whose license has been suspended for submitting a chemical, for having an excessive blood alcohol content, can have a request an administrative hearing and receive it. Under 302.535, they're entitled to, and the statute explicitly calls this a trial de novo, a review in the circuit court of that decision. The procedure we have here, which occurs after a refusal under 577.041, there is no prior administrative hearing. The reason I refer to it as a trial de novo is just to make sure the court understands. I was using that term in a broader sense. It means that there is no deference to the director's decision. There's no presumption of correctness. Her factual determinations, her legal determinations, none of that is presumed correct. So the trial court is starting over from the beginning. The Missouri courts have been quite clear, even though this isn't quite fleshed out in 577.041, that the director has both the burden of production and the burden of persuasion. And the point of pointing all that out is just to show, our fundamental concern here is to make sure there isn't a high risk of an erroneous deprivation, that the person who's being deprived of something, be it their property or some legal right, has a meaningful opportunity to develop the factual issues, to have a neutral magistrate decide those factual issues and the legal issues in their case. That is fundamentally what
the process
is
about. Do you get more rights in the trial? I mean, for example, in the Leonard Tennant case in 517, at least it's been interpreted, you do not get a jury trial in a rent possession case. However, if you get a trial de novo, you can get a jury trial in the circuit court. Could it be interpreted that if you're in the circuit court for trial de novo, you have more rights as far as confronting your witnesses?
Well, I think that argument begs the question. I mean, because the issue is what sort of procedures that you're entitled to. If there's a right that's very important, a state couldn't take that right and then put it in an administrative hearing and say you're not really entitled to very many rights because it's administrative. If you're entitled to rights, you're entitled to those rights, to those procedural rights, whether it's done in an administrative proceeding or in a trial proceeding. What probably is relevant in that analysis is this something where, is this really your last opportunity to make a factual determination? If it's not, if there's going to be another opportunity later on down the line, then, if this is, for instance, an initial deprivation of a right, later you're going to be afforded a fuller hearing, that can be relevant to the analysis.
In small claims court, which is now $5,000 in small claims, you're saying all the rest is sort of loosely observed, but if you take an appeal to the circuit court, then you assume you're going to get circuit court rules.
Right, and again, that's important to the analysis because, if it's initial hearing, but you're going to be able to have, develop the record more later, then, a sort of short-circuited procedure at the beginning might not violate due process. And a lot of these cases are about the sort of initial deprivations and how much process is due you know, or is much process at all due before the state can initially deprive you? And a lot of that analysis will depend on what are the further rights that are permitted, that are allowed down the road. But Richardson versus Perales, which is the Social Security case that I cited in the brief, was actually about, was essentially the final determination. There were the final factual determination. There were other levels of review, but they were much closer to an appeal, where it's only based on the record that's developed. The record's not allowed to be developed more after that point. And there are certain presumptions about correctness about the proceedings below. The hearing that was at issue in Richardson really was analogous to this hearing in that it was a final determination of a privilege, or, you know, the deprivation of a legal right to disability claims. And in Richardson, they determined that the admission of hearsay was okay. Now, the driver in this case will point out that, you know, there were a lot of reasons that the court and Richardson decided that hearsay was admissible and didn't. Well, they decided that the admission and the use of that hearsay evidence to deprive the claimant of his rights didn't violate due process. They didn't specifically say it's admissible, but it was sort of assumed that it was admissible, and that if the court used that evidence as substantial evidence to deny the claimant his claim, that that didn't violate due process. Some of the reasons were the notions of neutrality that supposedly existed in this Social Security hearing, that the judges himself was neutral, didn't really appear to care, you know, one way or the other whether the person got benefits, that it was non-adversarial. But what weighed really heavily in the court's analysis was the claimant's failure, his opportunity and failure to subpoena the doctors who made the reports that he was complaining about. And I'll quote from the case: "This inaction on the claimant's part supports the Court of Appeals' view that the claimant, as a consequence, is to be precluded from now complaining that he was denied the rights of confrontation and cross-examination." So the theory is not only that due process doesn't require, you know, due process is satisfied if the person complaining about the hearsay evidence has the opportunity to subpoena the hearsay declarant. But there's also a waiver analysis here that's very important, that if they don't do that, then they cannot later stand up and claim their due process rights were violated. They waive that right. And that's what happened in this case. Unless the court has any other questions, then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This was not a Crawford versus Washington case. In fact, the prosecutor mentioned Crawford versus Washington on the record, said this is not a Crawford versus Washington case. And I specifically point out, no, it's a 14th Amendment Goldberg versus Kelly case. You read Goldberg, it says when you've got a fact witness, you know, that witness's testimony needs to be tested by the crucible of cross-examination. I don't remember which case that happened in, but what happened is these two cases were set back to back, and both Mr. Doty's were in the courtroom, the prosecutor and the judge and myself, and one testified, then the other testified. It was kind of like a group-type hearing, and so you don't find...
That Goldberg versus Kelly goes back to my time, my goodness. I mean,
yes.
That's allowing a hearing in welfare cases, which they didn't allow before that.
Yes. And but it's been reinforced by several cases from this court and some of the appellate courts, other appellate courts in the state of Missouri, is that
But hearsay exceptions are permissible as long as certain requirements for
right.
them are met. Why is this not sufficient when the state says that the ability that you have to subpoena someone makes it fair because it's up to you whether you want to have them available for cross?
Well, when a court orders the person to show up and testify...
But that's I'm asking about the constitutional issue, the basic constitutional
Yes, but that is the constitutional issue. When that witness is going to be there, when a court orders them to show up and testify, they're going to be there until the court discharges. If the court doesn't discharge them, you have a right to expect to have an opportunity to cross-examine
but
the witness.
What about the argument made here that's not the argument you made below, that you argued below that it was... that basically they were inadmissible without the officer being there, since the officer didn't show up, they could not be admitted, and you did not argue that you'd relied on the subpoena for the officer and that you needed the officer there. In fact, you were trying to take advantage of the officer not being there to support your argument that the evidence couldn't come in.
No, I don't think that the evidence should have come in under due process. I think that 302, 312 is simply an evidentiary statute that waives the foundational requirement. They come in. Okay.
But it doesn't waive all the foundational requirements.
Maybe not everything. But it, you know, but once the officer subpoenaed to testify, due process says I get a shot at him on those records.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't argue that, relied on him. Opposing counsel said, is that correct?
I don't agree. I mean, I felt like my due process argument said, hey, you can't do this. You know, you can't take those records and admit them without the officer testifying when they've been subpoenaed. I mean, I was doing the best job I could on those spots, but yeah, I felt like that was a due process violation, which is exactly what had occurred. And Goldberg said that you need to be able to have the opportunity to cross-examine that witness.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now on this, thank you. Any more you want to offer?
You brought up in when you were talking to the other side about, you know, why didn't they show up? Okay. This is a really bizarre case. The two of us went over there. We tried our two cases in front of the court. And then we went down the street. In fact, we were running down the street because an hour afterwards, we were to appear in the municipal court in the city of Nevada to try the DUI cases on the criminal charge. Okay. Guess who was sitting there?
The police officers.
Both of them.
Yeah. Well, doesn't that solidify the fact that he might have just thought it was the wrong date? He was subpoenaed for a different date.
It has been suggested there's another reason. That perhaps somebody suggested don't show up.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the party who offered him.
Who subpoenaed him, yes. Mm-hmm. And assume
for sake of argument, even though that's not a record, it's true. Don't you still have to make some sort of record and ask the judge to make the person show up, especially if the subpoena doesn't have the right date on it?
Well, no, because when you're subpoenaed, you're obligated to go on and on and on with the case. And as you look at the record.
Sometimes you are. If people actually showed up, right, if people actually showed up and the judge said, your subpoena is of a continuing nature, I think that's true. But if nobody shows up and nobody tells the person what date they're supposed to show up, and somebody throws them in jail or attaches their body. Now, that does seem like a due process violation to me. In other words, that they would incarcerate you or attach your body because you didn't show up on a date that you never got any notice of.
But if you look at the record, the prosecuting attorney stated on the record, I wrote them a letter and invited them to be there. Okay? So he represented to the court that he had told them to be there on that date. So one of two things happened. Either those officers intentionally blew him off, or somebody in the proceedings had suggested to them that it wasn't necessary for them to show up because we have the statute and we don't necessarily want you to show up because, because of the way this case came about, the officer in Norman Dowdy's case was fired less than 30 days after this hearing.
Now in St. Louis, where I practice, Judge Roy Harper, United States Federal District Judge, when a lawyer announced ready subject to a docket in St. Louis County, Judge Roy Harper sent the U.S. Marshals out to collect the lawyer and bring him down to federal court.
Yes, I
He was not subject to St. Louis County.
Yes, I'm familiar with that case.
You're too young for that.
Well, then, maybe that's a different case, but then it occurred out of in the western side of the state sometime in the last 5-10 years where the judge seized the – I mean, I think he actually disciplined him. Didn't he bar him from the court?
Clay County.
Yeah. Clay County?
The eastern side.
Okay, so you were talking about the one in the eastern – okay, yeah, and I'm sorry. That is the western side is the one I was familiar with. Yes, I'm familiar with – wasn't it – in that case, it was the lawyer.
Right, lawyer.
Yes.
Well, what happened in the criminal – the DUI case was – where the officer testified?
They didn't testify.
They didn't?
The clients were offered a suspended position sentence. They've got full control of the case. Okay. What do you do?
Okay. Now, your time is up here. Rather than to avoid deja vu all over again, is there anything you have to add in the second case? You can. I mean, I'm trying to say.
There's a few things that, yeah, I didn't really get a chance to hit on, and maybe I'd like to also point out that in David Dowdy's case, the officer, of course, was sitting in the court and went ready to testify, but he, as far as we know, he has not been fired.
So we can consider the first case over. Do you want to start your second case now?
Yes. I'm sorry. Apologies.